Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If you're 21 years old and use nicotine or tobacco, I'm here to tell you about Black Buffalo and how it's redefining tradition for millions of adult consumers. So if you're over 21, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults aged 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For Tech Stuff listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology by Ray Kurzweil. Kurzweil explores a future where man and machine are one and the same. Tech Stuff is fascinated by the idea of singularity, and this is a great book to learn more about it. The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology by Ray Kurzweil, available from Audible. To try Audible free today and get a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/techstuff. That's audiblepodcast.com/techstuff.
Well, hello there, kids, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as is typically the case when we talk about technology and stuff in the studio, that would be senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Somewhere in La Mancha, in a place whose name I do not care to remember, a gentleman lived not long ago, one of those who has a lance and ancient shield on a shelf and keeps a skinny nag and a greyhound for racing.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I actually know where that comes from.
Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's Brave New World right there. Brave New World is what that's from.
I thought that was Beowulf.
It was that, you know, that's the original first line of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales is actually what that is. You didn't recognize it because I didn't use the Middle English.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
We're full of beans this morning.
Frequently when we talk about topics on Tech Stuff, it's either something that's near and dear to our hearts or it's something specifically that somebody wrote in about, and this is actually something sort of more toward the former, but it's also something that's hit the headlines. And it's probably near and dear to many of your hearts as well, because the company we're talking about is going through some very rough times, and it's somebody that made a real difference to really the world.
Yeah, we're talking about Kodak here, and Kodak has made a huge impact on technology, on photography in general, especially when it comes to the average person having a chance to get his or her hands on a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Because before Kodak, photography was really a pretty limited field, and it was just there really were no
field.
There really were no consumer cameras, and the company itself has a very long history. It's over a century old.
Yes, yes, and really, well, for one thing, not long before we recorded this in February 2012. The company declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah, that was in January. And then a month later, mm-hmm. they made an announcement that really kind of showed how the company has changed dramatically. On February 9th, 2012,
mm-hmm.
Kodak announced that it was getting out of the camera business.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one thing to talk about all the businesses that Kodak is in. You know, but it started out in the film business, essentially,
yeah.
but moved quickly into cameras. And
right.
the idea that Kodak would stop making cameras is just sort of, it's really kind of earth-shaking
yeah.
to somebody who's grown up with it.
Right, right. It would be, it's hard to kind of, what would you compare it to? It'd be like if Apple said it was no longer going to make Macs.
Yeah.
Like, from now on, Apple was just going to concentrate on mobile electronics.
Well, I'd say it's even more earth-shaking than that.
Yeah, but
really.
I'm just trying to come up
yeah.
with something that people can...
It's like
can,
a core business is
right,
gone.
Right, yeah. The thing that is most identified, and I guess you could argue that mm-hmm. with Apple now, the iPod and the iPhone have kind of supplanted the Mac. But yeah, it's hard to wrap your mind around it.
Mm-hmm.
So this means no more digital cameras or video cameras or even digital picture frames from Kodak. Instead, what they're going to focus their main core business on.
Focus.
No longer will be cameras. It'll be printers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's good that HP decided to continue its consumer computer business and not focus primarily on consumer printers for its consumer side, because otherwise HP and Kodak would just be head to head. They still are technically.
Yes.
But
well, the apparently the bankruptcy filing included this information that as of the end of September 2011, Kodak had about $5.1 billion to its name. Unfortunately, it had $6.75 billion in debt. Including $12 million that it owed to Nokia in Finland for royalties on intellectual property.
So, yeah, when you have more debt than you have money, that's what we call a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's also what we call fresh out of college,
mm-hmm. Well,
at least in the United States.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's exclusive to the U.S.
No, but there are a lot of places in Europe where taxes end up mm-hmm. taking care of a lot of the – I'm just saying.
Well, Kodak –
student loans.
Kodak has quite a bit of intellectual property
yes.
information. And it tried to leverage that before it filed for bankruptcy.
Yes.
And this is not really new stuff. Kodak struggling has been a result of the burgeoning digital photography industry.
Yeah, I think
it has done somewhat of a semi-successful capitalization on. But
and I think you could say by now that digital photography has supplanted film
yeah.
photography
yeah.
for all but there's a decreasing number of photographers who will use film, and it's not that film is worse than digital. In fact, there are a lot of photographers who argue the opposite, that there are
yeah.
qualities that you get with film that you cannot get with digital unless you were to spend countless hours trying to recapture something that film does naturally on its own.
Yeah.
But that being said, the general consumer, it's almost all digital now. I mean, that's what we have in our phones. It's what we have. Some mm-hmm. MP3 players have them.
Sure.
Tablets. I mean, it's
our computers have, in a lot of cases, have the camera built into the frame.
Right. Yeah.
Use them for chatting and things like that. But you can also use them to take still photos.
It'd be very inconvenient if those were all film based.
True.
But yeah. So
wait, hold on. I got to take my laptop apart to get the film out.
Yeah. So some people say that Kodak's the reason why Kodak is in the position it's in now is that it did not adapt quickly enough. It did not commit fully enough to the digital revolution and stuck with the film side for consumer products, maybe a bit too loyally. Maybe
yeah.
you were a little too adamant on keeping with that film side of the equation, and not jumping enough over to the digital side. And you know, it's kind of hard to say whether, you know, back when Kodak was making these calls, it was hard to tell that that was going to be the wrong call.
Right. Well, and it's also an oversimplification because Kodak was one of the pioneers of digital
work.
Because we're going to look at that in a moment. Plus, you know, Kodak would have been in a much worse position or even gone by now if it hadn't diversified itself.
Yes.
I think we should take a look back.
Okay.
Starting from the beginning, and a guy that many of you know, he's a tech pioneer, but his name is certainly familiar to, it's a household name for many, many people.
Yeah.
And has been, especially in Rochester, New York.
So, you're talking about George Eastman.
George Eastman, who, you know, he's not known as the brainiest inventor who ever lived. In fact, he was sort of an average guy.
Yeah.
Came out of an average home, ended up having to jump right into the workforce, and actually was a banker for a while too. He went to school to become to improve himself, and ended up being a banker. But, you know, he went on a vacation. This is kind of funny. He went on a vacation and wanted to be able to take pictures. So he bought a wet plate outfit.
Yeah.
This is the way photography was done before Eastman got the idea to try to simplify things somewhat. Mm. And he had to buy a boatload of gear.
Yeah.
Because
just
if you
to
have
take a picture.
Yeah. Because with wet plate photography, you have to have the plate wet with chemicals before you take the photo.
Right.
And before the plate dries, you have to develop the photo.
Right.
So you have to keep he had to buy a tent.
Yeah.
So that he could develop the photos of his vacation on the spot before the chemicals dried.
Yep.
That's somewhat inconvenient. And this is why professionals were the only people taking photos, because nobody wanted to mess with this. It was expensive. It was a pain in the neck.
Yeah. And then came the development of the dry plate method.
Development.
Yeah, God, are you going to do that the whole podcast? Because I will quit right now.
The funny thing is, we use these terms, but these are totally photography terms.
Yes, they are.
So sorry.
Okay, so the progression from wet plate to dry plate.
Yeah, he knew about this. This is not something that he invented.
No.
Wet plate to dry plate.
Right. Dry plate meant that you no longer had to have those wet chemicals on the plates before you took your photo, and you didn't have to worry about it drying out before you had to develop it. But what he did was he came up with an emulsion coating machine, which allowed the mass production of dry plates, which was a big deal because that before then you were making dry plates one at a time. Very slow, painstaking process, not efficient. There was no real way to make that a consumer market device at all because it just took too long to make them.
Yes, this is one of those situations where he figured out, he heard about these experiments people were doing with a gelatin coating for the chemicals that you would use to capture an image. And he said, you know, I think that there's got to be a way to make this easier. And he spent long hours. After he would go home from work, he would spend hours working in his mother's kitchen trying to come up with a way to make this a mass production affair. And apparently they would find him in the morning. He would fall asleep on the floor in his clothes.
Yeah.
Coming home after a long day at the office, and he'd have to go back to work. So he spent a long time working on this process, and a lot of elbow grease really putting into the process of trying to come up with this.
But no headlight fluid. So in 1880.
Headlight fluid?
Yeah, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
In 1880, he began to create the commercial production of these dry plates. And he rented a loft in Rochester, New York. And this is the date that Kodak tends to trace its history back to.
Right.
Is in 1880 when Eastman started to actually produce these dry plates and sell them. And a year later, Eastman partnered up with a guy named Henry A. Strong.
Hey, you know, you got to go with somebody with a name like that.
Strong.
Just, you know, hey, we got...
Well, and you know what he made before he got into this whole film business, right?
Buggy whips.
Yeah, if you have a strong buggy whip, you know you're in good hands.
As opposed to those weak buggy whips.
I don't want to make any cracks about buggy whips. See, I can do it too. So anyway, they formed the partnership that they called the Eastman Dry Plate Company, which just rolls off the tongue. And then that year, that fall, Eastman quits his job as a bank clerk and devotes his full attention to this business.
Yep. So he really believed that they were going to make a name for themselves in this business.
And he was right. They were very successful very early. By 1883, so just 2 years after they had formed this partnership, they transferred over to a four-story building in an address that we now know as 343 State Street, Rochester, New York. And if you were to visit that area, you would find Kodak's worldwide headquarters.
Yep.
So they did not venture far.
No, not at all.
The building looks completely different. It's a different building.
Yes.
It's what's now 343 State Street. So we should make that clear. But in 1884, they changed the business, and it evolved from a partnership into a corporation with 14 shareholders it was a $200,000 corporation, which in 1884, that's a big chunk of change. I did not actually think to do the conversion to find out exactly how much that is in today's dollars, but I'll say lots.
Yeah, I only did one conversion, and that's for something that's coming up soon.
Yeah, I did too. I'm wondering if it's for the same thing.
Probably.
We'll find out.
And as a matter of fact, in 1884, that's when they introduced negative paper, which, you know, basically was paper that just complained about how nothing was going to work out.
I had a lot of negative papers in college.
Yeah. No, this, of course, as anybody who's worked with film for cameras is, what you use to capture, you have the negatives or, looks like, and, hold it up to the light. It looks like the opposite of what you see when you print a photo. William H. Walker, somebody who was working with the company, invented a roll holder for negatives. So this is just, this is trivia in a way, but it's not in another, because these guys are inventing the way that you capture images for and making it simpler and doing the mass production work for this stuff. So they're really inventing the photo business.
Yeah, it's because of the work that these men did that the consumer camera evolved the way it did.
I didn't say it.
I know, but I just wanted to stop myself before I said it again. Didn't quite work. But anyway, yeah, if someone else had made advances in the technology, perhaps cameras would have been completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think of that roll of film, that if you've ever used a camera that actually used film and you had to put a roll of film in and feed the film over through a little feeder, and then you would take photos and you'd look at the exposure number on your camera. The reason why we do that is because of the work these men did.
Right.
If other people had done something else, then cameras would have looked and behaved completely differently than the way that we think of them.
And as a matter of fact, in 1886, this is about the time that Kodak sowed its roots of sowed its roots, really sort of began began looking at the possibility that they should be getting into other technologies. They were the one of the very first companies in America that had a full-time research scientist. And he was looking at the creating a transparent film base, something that was flexible. It didn't have to be a solid plate the existing photo technology was.
Yeah, the first transparent photographic film came from Kodak, and it was right around that time. It was in 1888, when Eastman founded the Kodak Company.
Yes. I love the genesis of this name, because now companies come up with names for themselves and from products by going through marketing groups and focus groups and trying to come up with, the Excitra and things that were stir the passions.
The Conquistador.
Eastman sat down. He liked the letter K because he felt like it was a strong letter.
Yeah.
And just played around with words. He made up Kodak.
Yep.
And, look at that. It's short. It's sweet. And people remember it.
It's one letter off from being a bear.
Also, I think He also liked that the color yellow, the signature color yellow that they use on their packaging.
Yep.
And he came up with the slogan, "You press the button, we do the rest," for the first camera. Now, here again, it's 2012. They've stopped producing cameras, or are about to, really. So 1888 was when they released their first camera.
Yeah. Before that, they were strictly film.
Yes. And dry plate.
And dry plate.
Mm-hmm.
And now in 88, they've released their first camera. This is giving birth to the era of snapshot photography.
Yeah.
In the
this
sense
is
that
huge.
Yeah. This is what allows the average person to get a camera and not have a lot of training or expertise in photography and take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, we should stress that the quality of pictures is going to depend highly upon the type of camera and the photographer.
Mm-hmm.
We have a photographer as our producer today, and I just want to make it clear that we appreciate the intense level of skill that she has as a photographer.
I agree.
She's also scary.
And 89 was when Kodak released its first commercial transparent roll film.
Yes.
So this perfection, the release of the camera equipment, the release of the transparent roll film, this is a complete revolution because it's made photography available to the average person again. This is when, you know, things started to really change.
Yeah.
You also, at this time, though, you had to go into a dark area to load your camera because
yes.
you don't want to expose your film
yeah.
and ruin it before
yeah,
you can take pictures.
Because, of course, the whole thing about film is that it has a chemical reaction when it's exposed to light, and that's what allows it to capture photos or pictures. If you were to expose that film to light before you were to use it in a camera, then you would just ruin that film.
Mm-hmm.
It would be as if you had taken a photo already that was completely in uncontrolled circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to load it in a dark room until 1891 when they introduced their first daylight loading camera, which had the roll protected the film in such a way that you could load the film into a camera, advance it, the film, so that the little part that was exposed is beyond where you're taking the images, and you just start snapping away.
Yep. That's a big difference because I can tell you trying to load film in the dark can be really annoying, especially if you drop it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't want to discuss every little thing they've done. I mean, there's a lot of information on the Kodak website about type of stuff if you're really interested in the company, which is amazing. But I want to capture some of the highlights.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, they were the Eastman Company.
Yes.
They switched to the Eastman Company and then they became Eastman Kodak in 1892 to capture really play off of the name Kodak.
Yes.
Let's see. I mean, they basically grew for the next few years just rapidly. They took off. They built buildings. They started moving outside the United States.
Yep.
And then they announced the Pocket Kodak camera in 1895, which used roll film.
Mm-hmm.
And you, guess what? You could actually figure out where, what snapshot you were on.
Yeah.
Because it had an indicator to tell you what number you were on. Hey, I'm on number 12.
Right, which is very useful when you are wondering how many photos you have left on the roll. And, you know, anyone who's used a film camera and they've wanted to go out and take pictures of stuff, it can be frustrating. If you look down and you say, oh, wait, I only have two photos left. Is this moment really worth capturing?
Yeah.
Or should I wait and save those two photos? But before this, you essentially had to keep track of it with yourself until you realized that, oh, the camera's not advancing any further because I've taken the last image.
Anyone who's ever rolled his or her own film, as I have, also has had that problem because you go in the dark, you're sitting there loading, it feels like enough. You put it in the cartridge and then you start snapping photos and it doesn't matter there's a number on there.
Yeah.
Because you really don't know exactly how many photos you've got.
True.
They started moving into Europe about this time, but in 1896,
yes.
They started, we had see-through photos before because they invented the transparent film, but this is when they really got into see-through stuff because they started making plates and paper for x-rays.
Yes, which had only been discovered
the year before.
Yeah, in 1895. So, yeah, they jumped on that very, very quickly. I mean, Kodak at this point was one of the leading companies when it came to capturing and processing images.
Well, I mean, that also in 1896, they started promoting the first film especially made for creating motion pictures.
Yep.
They actually worked with some inventor guy who also lived in New York. I can't remember his name.
Tesla.
No. Oh. No, that wasn't it.
Oh. Alexander Graham Bell.
Nope.
Oh. Steve Jobs. I'm just going to keep giving wrong answers until you say the right one.
Thomas Alva Edison.
Oh, right. That guy.
That guy. Yeah.
I like to call him Elephant Shocker.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You're just mean.
Well, I didn't kill an elephant with an alternating current.
Well, technically, he didn't. He just sanctioned it.
Okay. Fair enough.
So
I was only following orders.
Oh, following orders. Yeah. So they did come up with the folding pocket Kodak camera.
Yep, 1898.
In 1898. Which was great if you had folding pockets.
Yeah, if you didn't, well.
Yeah. Well, this is the first to have the 2.25 by 3.25 inch negative, which was the standard size for, 30 years or so. For a while, anyway.
In 1899, Eastman kind of showed what sort of boss he was. Mm-hmm. If you listen to our HP, podcasts, you learned about the founders of HP were very much about rewarding employees and fostering a good corporate, citizen sort of profile, right?
Yeah.
Well, Kodak is the same way, and Eastman very much believed in rewarding his employees. And in
Absolutely.
1899, he gave them a bonus from his own personal money.
Yes.
Because he felt that they had worked so hard and done such good work for the company. So
I believe it was $10 million.
Yeah, here's a man taking money from his own pocket to reward his employees. Now, you don't see a whole lot of that today.
Yeah. Not at the same level.
No. No, so. I mean, you might get like a, here you go, congratulations.
Well, you see companies having funds set up within the company to, success sharing, reward sharing programs. But this is something that he gave from his own pocket.
Yes.
Which was pretty significant.
Pretty
really.
Phenomenal, yeah.
That's the kind of thing that makes your employees really want to work hard for you.
So.
And they did.
The 1900. So
yes.
We're talking about the turn of the century, unless you want to say 1901 is technically the turn of the century, which I would agree with you, but
let's 1900. Not argue semantics.
1900, that's when they introduced the Brownie camera.
Yes.
Which was probably the most famous camera, I would say, that Kodak, it's one of those that was synonymous with the Kodak name for a really long time.
Oh, yeah. And it was really sort of marketed to kids. Because it had the Brownie name and, the little elf that they used on the packaging. But here was the conversion I did.
Yes, me too. So
because it was $1.
Right.
They made it available for $1, which in today's money would be 2 cents. Or, if you took $1 in today's dollars, that would actually be $28.20.
There you go. Yeah, and the film was sold for 15 cents a roll, which was around $4.
Yep. Really, when you think about it, is not terribly expensive. It was meant to be something that the average person could afford effectively.
Right. Yeah. So for one buck, you could go out and buy a Brownie camera.
Mm-hmm.
That was again another revolution. It was suddenly making the camera technology not just available because it's sold to consumers, but mm-hmm. available because it's affordable. And then it really sort of launched this industry in the United States and then across the world. So, and then 1901, the Eastman Kodak Company of New Jersey, which became the parent company of the entire corporation, formed.
Mm-hmm.
And, Eastman became the president of the New Jersey Holding Company, and Henry A. Strong, became the head of the New York Company, and would remain the head of the company until he passed away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which was in 1919. But that's down the road a bit. Now, we've talked about the camera and the film.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things are of obviously paramount importance. Yeah, I did that on purpose.
It's a good touchstone.
I thought I had you outfoxed.
We're going to play this game now, are we?
There's a piece that we're missing.
Yeah.
And that's what happens after you take the photo.
Yes.
Doing darkroom work can be intensely rewarding, especially if you're cooped up in that room with a lot of developing chemicals and you start seeing little animals dancing around the room.
Exactly. Hey, all the photos are coming to life.
Yeah, really. But there's also you know, Kodak realized that it could make strides on the other side too.
Yes, the processing side.
And the processing side. And this was when they introduced the Kodak developing machine, which made it so much more simple. You didn't have to have a dark room. You could plop the film in the machine and it would do it for you. This is nice for amateurs who want to do this themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, 1903. See, these are all things that seem sort of trivial today, but they weren't at the time. Non-curling film. For the next 30 years, the non-curling film was the one that, that people used.
So why would anyone want film that didn't just slide a thing across the ice and sweep little shavings?
No. As in curly, you know.
Oh, like spiraling.
When you let go and it goes.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
So
I'm going to jump ahead.
Okay.
1914. I'm forcing us forward.
Okay. So I thought you were going to mention 1908.
You thought I was, but I'm not.
Okay.
Do you have something that you really need to say about 1908?
Well, the film at the time was sort of flammable because they were using a cellulose nitrate base.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
And they changed to cellulose acetate in 1908, which made it more...
Or acetate.
Yeah, acetate, which made it more non-Bernie-uppy friendly.
Yeah, so we had fewer photographer fires then, which was, you know, again, our producer appreciates.
Yes.
I've only seen her catch on fire twice, so it's improving. In 1914, they had their 16-story office building built in what is now 343 State Street, Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
And that 16-story building would later become a 19-story building because 1930 they added more floors to it. So that's the world headquarters. Then jumping ahead, in 1917, Kodak helped out in the war effort during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And they developed aerial cameras so that the U.S. Signal Corps could take photos, reconnaissance photos, during the war.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really... kind of during that time, I mean, there were a lot of companies that were all dedicating a lot of effort to try and support the United States in this world war. I mean, it was the very first world war, so mm-hmm. it was a huge deal.
Yeah, they also used that cellulose acetate for the coating airplane wings and developing lenses for gas masks that wouldn't mm-hmm. break, which is, you know, hey, they had it on hand. So
in 1921. Again, showing what sort of company this was, Eastman Savings and Loan Association was formed. And it was to help employees finance home purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So that was actually a pretty big deal that the company had created this institution to help its employees find and secure places to live. And eventually, that would split off to become a credit union.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They started making it possible. Now we were talking about the motion picture film earlier, but in 1923 they started making motion picture film available in 16 millimeter format for amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, black and white stuff. They also made the Cinekodak motion picture camera and the Kodoscope projector. So you could do everything. You could shoot the photos. They had film for it, and you could show home movies to your bored friends. I mean, to your friends when they would come over of
right.
your vacation. And then, they actually improved on that in 1928 when they made a color photo film or color movie film for amateur motion picture. People.
This is quickly becoming even more irritating than when we did Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, I agree.
Pie.
Yeah, and then they started in 1929 making it possible to use sound
yes.
on motion pictures. Now, we talked about that in a previous podcast,
yes,
well,
there's
too.
A special magnetic strip where the sound information is recorded
mm-hmm.
that's next to the actual images that you're capturing.
Yep.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
If you're 21 years old and use nicotine or tobacco, I'm here to tell you about Black Buffalo and how it's redefining tradition for millions of adult consumers. So if you're over 21, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults aged 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco.
Just as a note, all along this process, Kodak has been creating businesses to supply its business. So a few years before that, they had started a company to manufacture wood alcohol for the film base. And they're also doing other groups, a gelatin corporation to help with the film. So they're really creating their own infrastructure within the company, which is very helpful because it makes them a very solid player. They don't have to depend on somebody else to supply these materials to them.
Right. In 1932, this was a big year for Kodak in one positive way and one negative way.
Yeah.
In 32, that's when they introduced the first 8mm amateur motion picture film cameras and projectors. So now people can make home movies with 8mm film.
Again, that's a standard now.
Yeah, yeah. I
had guess why.
I had an 8mm camera.
Yep. I have 8mm film at home. I don't have a projector for it, but, you know, old home movies from the family.
Yep. Well, that's also the year that George Eastman passed away.
Yes.
And he left his entire estate to the University of Rochester.
Yes.
So again, showing that he really believed in giving back to the community and giving back to the people that he felt helped support him. Yeah. So that was pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, he really believed, just as an aside, he really believed in education too. And he donated money to help kids. He donated money for causes that were important to him, like, he was very into music and felt that to have a successful musical community in a town, you really needed to educate people about music so that they would appreciate it more. And that's where the money for the Eastman School of Music, which is a prestigious school, came about. I mean, he was really into education and helping people become aware of the importance of art. And, you know, basically education in general in the community. So there are a lot of institutions in Rochester. If you've ever been there, it's a great town. I've been, and, I should say city. It's a really neat place, but a lot of places in Rochester bear his name because of the contributions he made.
Sure. So in 35, they introduced the first, commercially available amateur color film, the Kodachrome film.
A lot of people still, Kodachrome really made a name for itself.
Yes, it
because
did.
Of the richness of color. And it was kind of unusual too because, it was black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the developing process.
Yeah.
That the color was aware. You would actually notice that there was color there.
Yep.
Because of the chemicals used to develop it. It was kind of fascinating to me. Anyway.
Yeah. 1937, they introduced the first slide projector.
Coda slide.
Yeah. Which was, you had to
one
load.
One slide at a time.
Right. Yeah. So not only could you bore your friends with your family photos, but you could take a really long time doing it.
Yes. They'll fix that later though.
Yeah. So where do you want to jump to from here?
Well, they did all kinds of things in 1939.
So many different cameras.
the ready mount for its Kodachrome film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as you got the slides back from the processing lab, you could put them together. All kinds of stuff. Kodachrome film for prints in 1942. That was the first color negative film. This was different from the Kodachrome.
Right. Yeah, the negative itself had color in it, not black and white.
Yep. And the Army, United States military gave the company an E award for high achievement in the production of equipment and film for the war effort.
Yep.
So they helped out in World War II as well. Then, of course, they made transparency film in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
They began looking at other companies too. They started making, this is kind of weird, synthetic vitamin A.
Yes.
In 1947.
Yeah, there's some parts of Kodak's history where if you're not really familiar with it, if you're only familiar with their cameras, you're thinking, what?
Yeah.
But this might be one of them.
Like many large companies, they realize the benefits of diversification. And that is what I think will save Kodak once it manages to make its way out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah, it's just a balance between diversification and not going so far outside your core business that mm-hmm. you are getting involved in something you have really, pardon the pun, no business in.
Yeah, they eventually would stop manufacturing vitamin A, but they did get into...
We like to manufacture vitamin A. See, the way it works is that you actually...
Okay, synthetic vitamin A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in 1973. But they did get into television recording along with DuMont Laboratories and NBC mm-hmm. in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started getting into safety film for the motion picture industry in 1948. They got an Oscar, as a matter of fact, for that.
Yep.
Kodak's
earned a couple of Oscars.
Oh yeah,
for its contributions. In fact, one of the things they were very proud about was that up until fairly recently, every single motion picture that has won the Best Picture category was filmed on Kodak film.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
The digital era is starting to change that, but you know, during the film era, that was true.
Yep. They started producing the Kodak Colorama display transparencies, which were they projected onto the main terminal floor at Grand Central Station in New York. That was 18 feet high and 60 feet wide. That's
really,
a lot of megapixels.
Really confused a lot of
wait, what's that up there?
Travelers there, yeah.
And then, of course, in 51, they did the 8mm Brownie movie camera.
Yep.
And movie projector in 52.
Yep.
They
had the Kodak Brownie Starmatic in 57.
Wow. In 54, though, you know, there are some people that prefer the look of black and white. And Tri-X, 1954 is when they released Tri-X film, which is high-speed black and white. I've used Tri-X.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good film. But yeah, I mean, they were still doing both black and white and color. Well, a lot of newspapers were still shooting black and white because they didn't have a color press.
Right. And this is again showing that, you know, they really, although they were looking at diversification, their core business was still very much in the film world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most of these innovations have to do with either the film process itself or the technology of the camera.
They did get into polyester textile fiber by Tennessee Eastman, which was the wood alcohol company we mentioned before in 58. But they started releasing a high-speed ektachrome film, the fastest color film in the market. And they had fully automatic exposure control in 59 on the Kodak cameras.
In 61, they finally introduced a Kodak carousel projector. Now you no longer had to front load that slide. Actually, there were other slides... slide projectors that they introduced before that, but the carousel projector is the one that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, well, that's the one with the big wheel that has all the slides in it.
Chunk, chunk.
Yes.
Chunk, chunk. Yep. Yeah, no, there were many a day in my school days when we were treated to slideshows, and then the entire class shouting out, "It's backwards!" You know, when the slide's in the wrong way, or it's upside down.
Yeah, that was the best one.
Yeah.
Was the upside down, and then you have to take it out. Put it back in.
Yep.
But that's where I think we get the concept of the slideshow. was from this carousel.
Sure, yeah. Things like, you know, in Keynote or PowerPoint where you're using slides or even, you know, the Google ones. There's lots of different presentation ones, but we talk about each one's a slide. That comes all the way back to these days when we use these slide projectors.
And of course, by this point in the mid-1960s, Kodak is a worldwide name. I mean, you know, everybody knows who they are. One of the most recognizable corporate names in the world.
Yeah, they exceeded $1 billion in revenue.
That's a lot of money in 1962.
That's a lot of money now. If you don't think so, feel free to send Jonathan Strickland $1 billion.
Exactly.
I will be happy to dispose of your paltry sum.
Yep. Again, you can go to the website and pick out more. I'm looking for famous names. Like in 1963, the Instamatic camera.
Yeah, the Instamatic,
we had one of those.
The Kodak Instamatic.
Yeah.
That, to me, is immortalized in the great, wonderful folk song by Weird Al Yankovic, The Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota. Then Bernie ran away with my brand new Instamatic, but at least we have our memories.
Well, they made more than 50 million of them by 1970. So yeah. in 7 years.
Yes.
And then, of course, you know, Kodachrome 2 made its debut in 1965.
Yep.
You know, the sequel... It's never quite right.
1966, they came out with the Kodak 2620, which was a color printer.
Again, this is important because this is a new line of business for them that is starting, you know, it had electronic memory, could do 2,000 to 3,000 prints an hour.
Yeah. So now
that's important.
Yeah, this printer technology, that's what they're really banking on today.
Yep.
That's
yep.
what they're switching their focus.
Mm. Oh, and the space program used Kodak film to take a photo of the crater Copernicus on the moon.
Yeah.
The Lunar Orbiter 2 used a dual-lens camera, film processor, and readout device, all Kodak brand.
Yep. And then over the next few years, they continued to develop more advances in movie film technology and their camera technology.
And fabrics.
In
68, Codel polyester fibers. I didn't realize that Codel, you know, you'd think the name would have clued me in, but I never realized that was them.
Yeah. Well, 1975 is the next really big development.
Yeah.
Aha. Again. Man.
I told you. We use that all the time.
I know. You start to realize how frequently you use the same words, right? So anyway.
But they are also doing, the duplicator, the Ektoprint 100 copier duplicator was in 75.
But the other big thing in 75 was the development of the first digital camera.
Yeah. See, this was done, again, Kodak has been doing research. They realized early on that research and development were important.
Yes.
Like Bell Labs, like many other companies, HP. And so Kodak, somebody at Kodak created a digital camera.
Yeah, they actually used the sensor that was created at Bell Labs.
Uh-huh.
And built a digital camera, which was a 0.1 megapixel black and white camera in 1975.
And they promptly told that guy to put it away where nobody was going to see it.
Yeah, it would be a while before Kodak would really start to get into digital photography and digital products.
However, it is important to note that they were working on this that far back in time.
Yep.
And they realized, you may say, why didn't they totally get into this and spend them? They realized what effect this would have on their entrenched businesses.
Yes.
They knew that then.
Yeah, so they knew that there needed to be some sort of transition between film and digital, or else they would, through innovation, they would put themselves out of business.
Yeah, I make that joke, but I don't mean to suggest that they would really, you know, hide this away. But they knew what an innovation this was, and they had it in the back of their heads.
Yeah. So 1980, they celebrated their 100th anniversary.
Yay!
So. Happy 100 years in 1980.
Yep.
In unrelated news, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back came out.
In 1982...
That was a good movie.
Kodak introduced what many of my friends had. Now, I think this is sort of a forerunner of today's point-and-shoot cameras that... Well, actually, so was the Instamatic, for that matter. But not like the form factor of the disc camera, which showed up in the 82. Which, if you aren't unfamiliar with it... rather than having a cartridge with film that scrolls across where the shutter is and the viewfinder so that you can, you know, take a picture that way, the viewfinder is sort of off to the side because there's it looks like a daisy wheel.
Yeah.
Or a flower. of photo negatives. So the film is on a disc. You drop the disc into the camera and it rotates to make the exposures. Now, people who were real photographers complained about the quality of these photos because they're very tiny.
Yeah.
However, they were very popular because they were flat and easy to carry.
Yeah. And that was also in 82 when they had their pavilion open at Epcot.
Ah, yes. I've been to it.
I have as well.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
If you're 21 years old and use nicotine or tobacco, I'm here to tell you about Black Buffalo and how it's redefining tradition for millions of adult consumers. So if you're over 21, consume nicotine or tobacco, and want to join the Black Buffalo herd, head over to blackbuffalo.com to learn more. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Black Buffalo products are intended for adults aged 21 and older who are consumers of nicotine or tobacco.
In 83, they introduced the Kodak Car 4000 information system,
mm-hmm.
which helped with the storage and retrieval of microfilm images. They also were getting into, and they had been doing this all the way back to helping out with the whole X-rays thing, really getting into the medical fields, helping develop technology specifically for medical purposes. And not necessarily tools like a syringe or something, but more like camera and imaging tools specifically for medical procedures medical tests.
Absolutely. Yeah, they created the Eastman Pharmaceuticals division in 86, just to get ahead of myself for a little bit. There were a couple things, though, that I wanted to note. In 84, they started producing floppy disks for computers.
Mm-hmm.
They made video cassettes in 8mm beta and VHS formats, covering their bases.
Yeah, if you guys don't know what beta is, ask your parents or
they
Google.
Probably don't know either,
yeah,
unless
might,
they worked in.
You might need to Google.
Yeah, really. And they also came out with the Mini Lab in 85. I remember this when people started offering the Mini Labs for fast developing in the corner.
Oh,
photoshops.
I thought they were just tiny Labrador retrievers.
In 86, also, in addition to their pharmaceuticals division, they started making
sense.
Batteries. The Ultralife lithium power cells and the Superlife batteries. I have bought some. This is important. Again, they're getting into other kinds of these other categories of businesses.
Right.
Not completely unrelated. I mean, they've been in, these are all chemical related businesses for the most part.
Sure.
I remember the introduction of the Fling in 87, too, the one time use cameras.
Yeah.
And then he acquired Sterling Drug in 88, which was kind of strange.
Yeah, that was one of those moves that seems kind of odd. And they would actually end up divesting themselves of much of that business. Anything that didn't have to do with imaging, you know, anything that was health related but was still an imaging part of the industry, they kept. But anything that was non-imaging health related, they divested themselves of in 1994.
Yeah. Yeah. just sort of skipping ahead bits and pieces because we're getting kind of late here.
Yep.
But really, they're continuing to innovate through this time in printers, copiers, and the other core
disposable cameras.
Disposable cameras, and they created a recycling program too, which is kind of ahead of its time.
See, it just makes me think of there's an episode of The Office where the new receptionist, Erin, says she loves disposable cameras, but she thinks it's such a sad waste because she doesn't understand that you take them in to get the pictures developed. She takes photos and then throws the camera away. So for her, it's just the process of taking the photo that's joyous.
Yes.
But you don't actually get a photo afterward.
Yeah.
That's not how those work, people. not that many people use those anymore, except that I do see them at things like weddings.
Right.
Where the disposable camera is left at the center of the table so you can snap photos that will be, disposed of after the ceremony.
Right.
And so everyone's just like, oh, it's another picture of Bill with a wedding cake on his nose.
Yep.
Yay. Fantastic.
In 1991, if you happen to have a Nikon F3, you might have been in luck because that was when Kodak came out with the professional digital camera system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had an F3, you could use this system with developed by Kodak with a 1.3 megapixel sensor.
Yeah, which today sounds just like...
Which is a fairly small format, but probably big enough for most news photos, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Especially at the time, that was pretty on top of things.
Yeah.
And then they started making writable CDs,
mm-hmm.
Continuing to innovate for other its core lines. They did digitally restore Walt Disney's Snow White and Seven Dwarfs in 1993.
Yep.
Dwarves.
No, it's dwarfs.
Yes, I know.
There's no V.
I know.
It's only Tolkien that does the V.
I know. Kodak Royal Gold film, which was, I remember, a popular color film, came out in 1994.
Yep.
And they launched their website, Kodak.com, in 1995.
Yeah, back then, in 95, websites were pretty new.
Yep.
So, yeah, Kodak was trying to create a presence on the web where they could show off all their different products and services.
Mm-hmm.
And, so they were right there, you know, not at the very leading edge, but pretty close.
Yeah. Yep. They came out with the advanced photo system where you drop in the film cartridge and you could change the film before you'd shot all the film.
Mm-hmm.
They also came out with its Advantix line, which was sort of moderately popular. It was supposed to be an advanced photo system.
Yep. In 99, mm-hmm. they had another pretty interesting innovation. This was with a partnership with Sanyo Electric Company.
Mm-hmm.
They showed off the very first commercial model of a full-color organic electroluminescent display, or OLED.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're just now starting to see television sets that have OLED displays at a size larger than just a few inches.
Yeah.
A few years ago, a 12-inch OLED screen was probably the biggest you would see at something like CES. But this past CES of 2012, I saw a 55-inch OLED screen. Well, you know, we go all the way back to 99 to see those first shown off. So that's it's been a long journey.
Mm-hmm.
We're still not to the point where OLED technology is cheap enough to manufacture that's going to be within the grasp of the average consumer, because we're talking about $10,000 television sets right now,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know about you, but is a little outside my price range.
Yeah, yeah. They also divested themselves of the digital printer, copier, and roller assembly operations to a company in Germany in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
But they did continue to make imaging film for healthcare. They came out with lines of digital photo outfits in the early 2000s.
Yeah, in 2001, they came up with the Kodak Easy Share system,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of their digital cameras have that Easy Share branding on them. And it's all about the ability to port digital photos from one thing to another as seamlessly as possible. And these days, it would mean things like you would connect your camera to your computer and it would just pull things over directly into, say, Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And these products are very popular. I mean, they ranked highest in customer satisfaction in a couple price segments in the J.D. Power & Associates survey in 2004. I'm sorry.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're still making very popular photography products. But, you know, this ended up not lasting forever. I mean, the lists of things that they're working on you know, are extensive yeah. to this period of time.
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, the company is still very involved with film.
Yeah, and it wasn't until 2009 that they retired Kodachrome.
Yeah.
Color film.
Which made a lot of people, and still makes a lot of people, very unhappy because nothing quite shoots like Kodachrome.
Yeah, it made a lot of people unhappy, but not enough people for them to keep the product going. See, this was the thing, was that Kodak was holding on to those film products longer than the market was actually able to support them. So yeah. you have this big company that has a storied history in mm-hmm. film.
Yeah.
And there's still plenty of photographers who very much value film and film's place in art and in industry, but there's a diminishing returns. There are fewer and fewer of the photographers, and a lot more of them are switching over to digital, either because they prefer it or because they feel that it's necessary, because that's just the way the world is moving. And so the returns for Kodak were decreasing year over year, and they mm-hmm. had to make these tough decisions. And a lot of people I've recently read have suggested that perhaps they waited too long, and that's part of why they're in the financial position they're in today.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, Kodachrome is, remember we were talking about how it's black and white and the color is produced through the developing process. That's a very specialized developing process.
Mm-hmm.
And it became the kind of thing that, it wasn't that, you know, although Kodak made, photography cheaper and easier for the average Joe or Jane to get into, Kodachrome became something that the serious photographer did.
Yeah.
And, you know, it required a special developing process. And, you know, at a certain point, that becomes too cost prohibitive for the manufacturer of the film and the producing. See, they were involved in all that stuff. So it
yeah.
was, you know, they're making it for a very few people.
Right.
And so it just became too expensive. But I think Kodak's going to pop back. They have so much intellectual property. They you know, were wise to invest in a diversity of products that were sort of related to the core group of products, and I think they'll make it. They're just going to need to do some restructuring and divest themselves of things that they don't make as much money on.
Yeah,
and sadly, that's cameras in this
yeah,
case.
Yeah, it's interesting because even though they are getting out of the camera business, they're still going to be making money off cameras because they hold this intellectual property, these patents that they have licensed off to other companies. So they are making money from camera technology. It's just
yes.
they're not making cameras themselves anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still doing other stuff. So we wouldn't call them like a, you know, when we did our episode about patent trolls and
mm-hmm.
the companies that all they do is hold patents and then that's how they make money.
Yes.
It's not that Kodak's going down that route.
No, no.
But they are definitely shifting over. So yeah, that's the story of Kodak as it stands today,
mm-hmm.
today being in February 2012. And it'll be interesting to see what the future of this company is and whether or not they will be able to reinvent themselves in such a way to become another industry leader, perhaps in a totally different industry.
It's kind of funny, though, that one of the technologies that on which they were really on the bleeding edge ended up massively changing the world in which it inhabited. I mean, they really created an industry in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And also created a technology that destroyed that industry or is destroying it. Or maybe, okay, that's too strong. Changing it so dramatically that is causing the company to have to completely restructure its core business.
Yeah. yeah. I think if they could invent
I thought about that.
I think if they could invent a time machine, they'd go back to 1975 and say, guys, let's not do this yet.
Or go back and say, let's invent the digital stuff that we're going to need before this film thing takes off.
Yeah, right. Or let's really concentrate on digital and do it before anyone else and do it
yep.
better than anyone else.
Yep.
Yeah, there are a lot of woulda, shoulda, couldas.
Yeah.
That's the way it works, right?
But no, I think it's definitely not a sad story. It's just kind of a sad to see them stop making cameras.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll keep our eyes on them, see what happens.
Yep.
If you guys have suggestions for topics that we should cover, whether it's another company, whether it's a person, a specific kind of technology, let us know. You can tell us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuff, HSW. Or shoot us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom. Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.